beginning part, preliminary. Of course, every teaching has preliminary, main, and conclusion. Now it's the preliminary part. Now the main part, we have to visualize that oneself surrounded by all the sentient beings together with you, and you have to visualize on top of not just oneself but everyone. Or you have to visualize white lotus, and on top of that is a moon disk, and on top of that is the letter Shi, and out of the letter Shi, you have to visualize the Avalokiteshvara appears, white in color, one face, forehand. White, color white is because it symbolizes the pureness or the clearness of the Avalokiteshvara's Buddha. And also, his Avalokiteshvara will look at all, chain his eyes. So he's looking at all sentient beings through the compassion. So that's all why it's called charity also in Tibetan word. And now, he has four hands. The first two hands are folding on his heart. And also it means that Avalokiteshvara is calling out to all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas to give blessing, to guide all sentient beings out of samsara, to liberation. So this is what he's requesting to all Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. And the right hand is holding a crystal 108 beads rosary, clear crystal. So it's also symbolizing that he is there 24/7 looking at all the sentient beings. He's never tired, or he's never stopped blessing or liberating people or sentient beings from this samsara. So that's symbolizing of that. And the left hand is holding a white lotus, and also symbolizing the compassion through the lotus, adorned with many different colorful clothing, with all the different different ornaments. Avalokiteshvara also has a skin, I think it was deer skin, covering his left breast. This skin symbolizing his compassion towards all sentient beings. On the top of his head is Amitabha, because he came out of Amitabha's body. And two legs are in lotus position, or folded together, symbolizing the wisdom and emptiness together. And behind his head is there again another moon disc. This symbolizing that the coolness of moon is clearing, or clearing all the your negative emotions, or the cooling down all the heat of anger, desire, ignorance. And also the last one is that you have to not just visualize this Avalokiteshvara in front of you, which is not just him, but in this Avalokiteshvara, your guru and all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas are all combined together in this one Avalokiteshvara. This is the visualization part, and then of course we have the chanting. Then you are basically calling out to the Avalokiteshvara to bestow blessing, and that you are doing a prostration to him. This is the second part here. And you have to do the recitation a few times, or as much as you can. And then the next one is doing the sevenfold prayer, or seven limb prayer. This is to now purify oneself before do this, the mantras. We are trying to purify ourselves. So this is also a very important purification process. Is basically confession is first one is the prostration to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. And then the second one is to offering of flowers, water, food, whatever it is that you want to offer, music, you are offering to all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. And the third one is confession. You are confessing all your sins, not just which you have accumulated in this life, but all the past lives also. You are confessing all your sins. And then The fourth one is rejoicing. You are rejoicing to all the good deeds, all the teachings that you have, all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas you have bestowed. You are rejoicing to that. And this is how it works is that because if you think, oh, they did the good deed and if we just rejoice, how does it help me? Because then, let's say somebody is giving food to somebody or poor or saving somebody's life or anything like that. And then you say, ah, I feel good that he did that or he or she did that. So I'm very happy for him. And I all rejoice. So by doing that, you are actually, profiting, or you are also generating merits through somebody else's deed. So this is also very important. And the fifth one is to requesting all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas to turn the wheel of Dharma, to give you teachings, to receive, give blessings, you are requesting to that. And the sixth one is requesting all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas to remain with us, to give us teaching, to give us, to guide us, to liberation, so without, going to in, without being going to Nirvana, to remain with us, to give teachings to us. And the last one is dedication prayer. The all the whatever merits that you accumulate to you, not just keep it oneself, but for the sake of all sentient beings. So you are just basically distributing all your merits. By doing so, the one merit is not like where you have food and you are giving out to people, but this is all inwardly. So the more people that you dedicate, that's why we dedicate to all sentient beings. If you do that, your merit will also multiply many times. If you just do this for oneself, then you're only doing it for oneself. So your merit is also very small. But if you dedicate this merit to all sentient beings, your merit doesn't go smaller, but it goes more the bigger. So it's also very important. Now, after that is to, prayers. You are calling out your guru is the, whoever your guru or teacher is, that he is also Avalokiteshvara. Your deity is Avalokiteshvara. You are seeing everything as Avalokiteshvara. And you are everything to us. So please liberate us, Tara. And bring us to you or to oneself, to your close to you. So this is the prayer that you're doing. And it's a long prayer. In between you have mani mantras. Basically, we are talking about yourself, him, different realms. Each realm has one sentence. So basically the same thing. And then after this, I think with page 10, after this is where you have to visualize that the light rays through the power of your request, through the power of the Avalokiteshvara, and Avalokiteshvara light rays issues out from his body. That touches when the light rays touches yourself, it purifies all your inner negative emotions, and through the power of this light rays, everything outwardly, everything becomes into paradise or the devachi, where the paradise of the Amitabha, and all your everything dissolve into So everything is now you are in the paradise. Now at the beginning when I say you know, because forget we are supposed to say, okay, I am, this place is paradise, I am blessed with the Amitabha, all my emotions are purified. And that the difference between the great practitioner and the beginner is that the very same thing is that our great masters, they believe that. That's how you become great masters. We have doubt, okay, this very place, maybe how is this a paradise? So you are questioning yourself. So this is where I say knowing and believing. We know this is what once we are supposed to visualize, but visualizing and believing, the more you believe, the more power you are gaining, the more powerful is your chanting and your visualization. The more blessing you are receiving, the more merits you are gaining. So this is the difference. Everything I see is Avalokiteshvara. The place where I am is the paradise. Every sound I hear is the Mani mantra. So this is also very important. Now, that your body, speech, and mind, and Avalokiteshvara's body, speech, and mind turn into one. So after that, now we have to chant the Mani mantra. At the beginning, I said that Mani combines all the Buddhas and Buddha's teaching. So now I will tell you a reason why. Because Mani has six words. Om, Ma, Ni, Pad, Me, Hum. Six words. Now, Om, meaning of Om, Om also is basically three words. A, U, Ma, Om. So three words also means your body, speech, and mind. This is symbolizing that. Mani means jewel. Mani means also the method. Mani also means that one of there are many Avalokiteshvara's body, and then one of them is holding the jewel. So there are many. One thing you have important to remember is this is the method. Mani is also the jewel and also the method. This is what you have to remember. Padme, as I said, that one of the Avalokiteshvara is holding jewel, wish fulfilling jewel, and one hand is also holding the lotus. So symbolizing that, and also another symbolization is Padme is wisdom. The meaning of Padme is also wisdom. So Tapta Sherab, your method and your wisdom. All the Buddha's teaching is all about method and wisdom. So that's why it's considered that Om Mani Padme Hum holds all the Buddha's teaching. Last one is Hum, which combines the wisdom and method. So it's like a bird cannot fly with one wing. You need two wings. So just like that, you need wisdom and method to work together to get you out of this samsara, to liberate. Another simpler way of explanation is Om Ahom means body, speech, and my body, speech, mind through the wisdom and method liberate me out of this samsara or bring me to you. So this is a very simple, very easy, but very powerful combines. I mean, all the Buddhist teaching is all about wisdom and method. He is trying to use different methods, different to teach you with his great wisdom. So this is basically Om Mani Padme Hum holds all the Buddha's teaching. So it's a very powerful, very easy. But I believe that many people neglect this because it's very easy, because it's very common. But when it comes to teaching, when it comes to practice, there is no such thing as simple or easy or common. So everything is as powerful as it is. The power of, we have different deities, we have different practices. All of them are different methods. There's no more powerful, less powerful. Oh, my deity has six hands. Oh, my deity has only two hands. Oh, my deity has big, tall. Or my, this doesn't matter. It's all about how you do your practice. We have different many deities because we think we are different. This question I get asked many times. For example, many of the people come and ask me, do you see the difference between because Buddha came about 2,500 years ago, somewhere around there, and his teachings are very old, like 2,500 years old, and we are 21st century. We are in such a modern, we think we are very different. Now, we have different cuisines, for example, Italian cuisine, French cuisine, Chinese cuisine, Indian cuisine, or American, British. We have all different kinds of cuisines. We may think they are very different. Oh, the taste is totally different. The spices are totally different. The way you cook is so different. The smell is different. But everything is so different. And we differentiate through that. Oh, because of the smell, because of the different taste. We think it's very different. But we forget the most important part of the food. What is the most important part of the food? Is to give you energy, to fill your stomach. To eat. The taste is secondary. The first point of eating food, because you want to live, you want to survive, you need to eat. That's why that is the most important part. First, number one reason why we eat is because we want to live, because we want to survive. We forget that one. Of course, outer color and taste and smell, these are not as important as to survive. So, just like that, Buddha's teachings, we say, it's very different, it's very old. Do you think that it will still work in 21st century? But my question is, 2,500 years ago, they have headache, they have stomach ache, they have jealousy, they have anger, they have ignorance. It still have the same thing. So why we are so different? Why Buddha's teaching, we think that it would not work today? Because the problem is the same. Yes. Outwardly, we are wearing different clothing. Our accents have changed. The way we speak has changed a little bit. But the point is, inwardly, we have not changed anything. Whether we are talking about same century, different century. Yes, we do things a little bit differently. The way our hairstyle may have changed a little bit. Our pants have changed may have a little bit. Things may have changed a little bit here and there, but the main problem, our inwardly, our attachment, our ignorance, our desire, it's the same thing. So with that also, you can also follow the same thing, whether it's Chinese or Americans or the French or the Italian or the British or the Russians. They may look different. Well, we are very different. We are colors different. African. We have so many different kinds of color. We may feel that we are very different. But if you go to any country, we have the same problem because of our anger, desire, ignorance. So if the problem is same, why not the method will be, why Buddha's teaching will not work? Because Buddha is not talking about outwardly things. Mainly he's talking about inward, inner peace, inner, because once you have control over oneself, it's all, Buddha's teaching is all about oneself and one's more controlling our mind. Because everything you see, you feel is through how you feel and how you see through inwardly. Your mind is telling you it's good. Your mind is telling you it's bad. Your mind is, so basically your mind is making you do whatever you do in your life. So if you have control over your mind, you have control over all the world or entire, if you are, no matter what kind of situation, no matter what kind of a difficult, worldly, difficult time you are going through, but if you have control over your mind, then there's no bigger problem. Then everything is almost, because that's why I always feel that our great masters, you never see them in a rush. You never see them doing fast and doing things in a harsh because they are always, their mind is always controlled. Mind is always going in the same speed, same pace. They are not worried about a small here, which we are doing for simple things, or small things. We get angry, we get emotional, because of these things, we let ourselves affected. That's why we do actions according to that. So once you control your mind, and Buddha's teaching is all about how you simple. He may talk about outwardly different things, the mountain, the Gibi, mainly. These are all methods. These are all methods. What he's trying to teach you is basically inwardly. Finally, it comes to oneself. And then finally it comes to the attachment. One's attachment, toward oneself. Everything, once you control yourself, then you have the power. You are basically liberated. If you put it in a simple word, liberation or the Buddhahood, in a very worldly way, if I say that once you control your mind, and not just for 1 second or a few seconds, but if you can keep it in that way, then that is liberating yourself. Liberation does not mean that you are going into a different planet or different next life or this thing. So it's all about once you see the true meaning of life, once you see that's where I always say, we know all this. All the students we have today here, thousands of here, we all know why we are here, because of our anger, desire, ignorance. There is no question about that. Anybody who have received teaching, they will know this is the reason why we are in samsara. But because of how much we believe in ourselves, and our practices is affected by that. I'm just a simple person. I am just a normal person. My sadhana is just, I'm doing it at my home, simple home. It doesn't matter whether it's your big home or small home. The point is that because I believe where it's coming from is because we know ourselves. I know myself. I cannot tell you how you feel because I cannot see your mind, but I see myself. I can feel my own mind. And I know how ignorant I am. I know how emotional I what kind of desire, anger, or ignorance all is going through him. I know. I can feel it. So that's why you feel, I'm not such a great person. I'm not a good person. I'm a very simple, minor person. And I've been speaking this to many of our students. As much as I can, I tell this again and again that there is no such thing as simple, or there is no such thing as normal practitioner. As you are doing your practice, you are already on the right path. You are already trying. You are trying, or already trying. That is a very, very big step, what you are trying. So whenever you do your practice, whenever you think of doing meditation or doing meditation, so you have to believe 100% that your practice really help all sentient beings. And this is the one step. Because you cannot take 1,000 steps at the beginning. You have to start from one step. One step becomes two step, three step, then you will accumulate till you reach the 1,000. You cannot just, first step is 1,000 step, cannot be like that. So, your first step is right path, right step. So it is very important you believe in oneself. Because Buddhas and all these our masters who came to into samsara to teach, they did not teach everywhere and everything. They checked. They checked and felt and saw that these people are worthy of our teachings, or worthy of teaching. If you are not worthy, you will not be receiving this teaching. So, you have to also understand that, for example, today's teaching, Thongtong Jabo, he believed in us. He believed in all of us. He put his trust in the teachings that he have received through our Lokishtrava, directly from him. He decided to share it with us. I believe that is the honor and such the respect and belief that he have shown to us. Now we have to show, if not all, a little bit of belief in ourselves, right? You have to believe because your guru believed in you. Our Thongtong Jabo believed in you. Our Lokishtrava himself believed in you. He knew, of course, I'm sure, and I mean, I know that our Lokishtrava believed in Thongtong Jabo, and knowing that he will give to other people, all these his students and all the followers in the future, they knew, they are Buddha. They know all the past, future, and present. They know everything. So they knew that you are going to practice. So if Avalokiteshvara didn't believe that in the future, these students are not worthy of my teaching, he will not pass it on to Thongdon Jabo. This is also very important, I think, how do you say, because we cannot talk of our Buddhas like normal person, right? Like, oh, if I don't tell him, he doesn't know. If I do a little bit drinking sometimes, if I do a little bit naughty things here and there, or he doesn't know. You cannot, that's, you are just lying to yourself. It doesn't work that way. You have to believe 100% that your guru is the Buddha himself. And he knows everything. And Buddha Avalokiteshvara, they are always there watching over us. Because it's just that our karma that we cannot see them. Because it's our karma. We have to merit more, gain more merits to see them, to receive them, seeing directly to them. But for that, we have to practice and we have, if we can't see them, that doesn't mean that they can't see you. They are not with us. They are always, in the, all 10 directions, they are always there. And all the different, they are, outwardly they are different, but inwardly they are all the same. I mean, just a few days ago I was doing Guru Padmasambhava's practice or the teaching, and there when I was reading that, he said that he is always there. He said he is always outside the door. It's just that when you open the door, he is there. He's always there. As soon as you open the door, he'll be coming. He's always waiting. So we are not waiting for him. He's waiting for us. So once we believe in ourselves, believe in our teachings, then everything will be changed. Everything will be much more powerful. Then whatever merit, if you're gaining, let's say 5 merits today, if you with this belief, you are multiplying by 500. So it is very important to believe that these our masters, our gurus and their gurus and their gurus, and if it goes back till for example this teaching till Thongdon Jabo, and Thongdon Jabo received directly from our Avalokiteshvara. So this chain which goes on till the Avalokiteshvara himself. So they all believed in one another, and they pass it on to different students. So I believe that it is very important that we with this belief that we have to do these mantras, and after the mantra we have to without any how do you say attachment or I have received this teaching, now my body and my mind and my speech are as powerful or as same as the Avalokiteshvara. So without any attachment, without any with control your mind, without any ego, without any attachment, we have to keep our mind in a very calm way. And if some emotions or some thoughts arise, you have to notice that this is a thought, and this is I felt that or I knew that. Then it will go down, it will come down, and you basically with that we have to meditate on the emptiness. Now this is up to here is the main part of sadhana. Now the conclusion part is basically you are calling out to the Buddha, Avalokiteshvara, and you are requesting all the sentient beings bring us to you or to liberate us. This is the dedication prayer, which is also a very important method, as I said, to multiply your merits. You are dedicating all the merits, whatever you have gained through your practice. During this practice, you are dedicating to everybody. And this is the completing the, this completes the sadhana. Now also I was asked to talk about the pandemic. I don't think, there's, as a Buddhist practitioner, there's not much special going on here, because death and sickness and getting old and dying is always there, even before the pandemic, even during pandemic, and after the pandemic also, it'll be same. It's just that our karma, depends on our karma, if we, we'll survive this, it's all about karma. You are alive because of three reasons. Karma, merits, and your merits, yes. Your life, your karma, your merits. These three things are keeping you alive. If one of them or two of them are on the low, then you can do life releasing, you can do practices, Amitabha practice, you can do all kinds of to get more of them. But if all three exhaust, there is nothing, no Buddha, nobody can do anything to keep you alive. And there are two kinds of karma. We have individual karma and the combined society's karma. Of course, this is you can say as a course combined all the people's combined together our karma that we have to go through this such a pandemic, and it's just that we have to accept Buddha as a Buddhist teaching, as a Buddha student, as a Buddhist follower. We believe in the truth, we believe in the reality, we believe in the way of life. So we just have to accept that, and then we have to go through that. Long ago in Sakya, there was a great master. He did not just follow Sakya. He also followed other masters. His name was called Mochutome. He was a great master, and one master asked him, what to do, if I get sick, if I am not sick, if I am, wealthy, if I am not wealthy, if I am dying or death, or if I survive. So what do I as a practitioner, what should I do? These are the questions they ask. And, Mochutome said that, if you are sick, then how you should, go through that is that you are sick because of one's karma. I am sick because my karma has because of my previous things that I did. Because of that, I am going through this suffering. And now you have to think that actually it's in a one way of thinking, this is a good thing, because when you are sick, that means you are now bad karma is dissolving. Because the more you suffer during this life, that means your bad karmas are going out. You are finishing. So your next life, you have less bad karma. So it's one way, it's a good thing that the suffering that you are going through, you should rejoice that my suffering or the whatever disease you're going through, whatever sickness, your pain you're going through, you have to rejoice. I'm sick. Now my karma is, all the bad karmas are going out of my system. So this is also, you have to rejoice. If you are not sick, of course, this is a very good thing. Then you can do practice, you can receive teachings, you can do all kinds of good deeds. You're able to, one person who is not well, who cannot who is sick, you cannot do anything. But when you are not sick, then you can do all these good deeds. There is a chance for you to do these practices and accumulate these good deeds. Now, if you are wealthy, he said, this is a very good thing. Now you can donate to the poor, you can do a lot of good things. You can accumulate more merit. This is a very good thing. But if you don't have any wealth, if you are a poor person, again, you should be rejoicing. Because of wealth, the amount of ego, the amount of problems you face, is not there anymore. You don't have to worry about all the houses you have, all these big cars, how many cars you have. All these emotions you have to go through because all of this wealth. You don't have to worry about that. And then you can do your practice. If you have wealth, of course, again, you can do life release, feed the poor, offer to the deities. You can do a lot of good things. So both ways, this is a good thing. So this is again what he said. And if you are facing death, is of course again the same as before. With death is the karma that you are, or you can, or that you have to go through, and your bad karma is going down. That means you are facing death. This is a good thing, because you die, your bad karma, amount of the karma is going with you. So that's also a good thing. If you are not dead, if you are alive, again, it's a very good thing. Then you can do practice, you can do all kinds of things. When you are alive, you can do things. When you are not alive, you can't do anything. But at the same time, with the death, the amount of bad deeds that you have done is also, how to say, coming to an end. So it also, that's a way you should rejoice your life. That's the way you should live as a practitioner. That was the advice, or that was the reply that he got. And finally, I would like to say one thing that the great master Shantideva said, Kenjin Shivatsu, he said, if there's a solution, why worry? Because we have a solution. If there is no solution, why worry? Because there's nothing you can do. So both ways, there's no, not to worry. You are in a good hands. You are a practitioner. You have great master. You are able to do this. So, I think I have bored enough for one day. Bored you enough for one day. So I will leave you with that. Thank you. Thank you very much.